So I'm hearing about this commentator on ESPN, and she made a comment about Donald Trump being a white supremacist, and like the White House is supposed to be demanding, I don't know what the fuck they're demanding, want a retraction or something. I wish I had the time to actually hear what she had said, or hear her say it, but I just heard about the story today, and I was like, what's the problem? She told the truth. What you mean? What the fuck do you want? She told the truth. Oh, I mean, I'm sorry. Do you mean to tell me that Donald Trump is a white supremacist? Where in the world would you have possibly seen, where could you possibly have received information like that? Pencils down. I didn't even know if that was, like, how is that even a fucking question? Is he a white, what do you mean? yeah. Of course he's a fucking white supremacist. Hello. He defended them. Remember that? David Duke. KKK. Alt-right. Richard Spencer. You know. David Duke. KKK. You know. Blood and Soil and all that good shit. Remember that? And they're fine people on both of the sides, on Trump's both sides. The part that was matching with the Nazis. Those are good people, fine people. Maybe from his fucked up world, they're fine people, sure. Yeah. I'm not understanding the problem that they have. If I was ESPN or that lady, I wouldn't apologize worth a fuck. Bitch, you can kiss my ass. Me? And I'll tell you the truth. I'll let y'all in on a little secret. Before I take something back, I'll add more to it. And that's just how it's going to be. Because usually when I say something, I mean it. When I say something, I mean it. I mean what I say. And I say what I mean. You don't have to read between the fucking lines. Because I'm going to tell you straight out how the fuck I feel about it. And that's just, you know, how it goes. But she didn't have to apologize for nothing. Not a motherfucking thing. Even today, this bitch was back on that same bullshit about Antifa and motherfucker Nazis, bitch. Do you understand? You see, and that right, that little glitch right there is actually something that I understand about Antifa. At least I think that I do. The fact that they may, in some of these cases, I think, are some of the Trump pansies, you know, posing as some of the Antifa people, because you can dress in black and cover your fucking face. So, I mean, hopefully they know each other, you know, but in the middle of a whole melee, you know, who knows, you know. But I can understand if Antifa really does. Like, when they're doing the college things like Milo Yiannopoulos and Ann Coulter, or, you know, all that Nazi bullshit, because that's what it is. They don't want you or anyone to even infect someone's mind with that bullshit. They don't even want you to talk about that bullshit. We don't want to hear a fucking thing about Nazism or Hitler or none of it. You ain't gonna tell nobody. You're not gonna start a new generation of the bullshit. And on that note, I'm with it. Because you pass down that hateful bullshit from generation to generation. So why the fuck shouldn't they try to stamp it out from generation to generation? Sometimes you just have to vigilante things. Not all the time. But some things will call for that type of force. That's why I have the most amazing respect for Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. Even though they were on, you know, diametrically opposed spectrum, you know, of the, well, they basically wanted the same thing, you know, but in much different ways. So, hey, Antifa is actually okay with me, as long as that's all that they do, they're not this thugged out, you know, crazy fucking gang group or something that just do this shit all the time to anybody. They don't. So that makes me kind of okay with them, as long as they don't become a gang. Hey, I'm okay with it. Because I think it's child abuse to infect somebody's child's mind or a young mind that's still forming with that nasty, ignorant, hateful bullshit. You see, because you have to, that's a miserable life, because you live a life of hate. That can't be much fun. Your face is always sour. You always want to fight, you know. We don't want to do all that shit. We want to be peaceful, calm. We want our fucking money. We want our weed. Yes, Corey Booker, do your thing. You know, we want our healthcare, bitch. We want to chill over here. You motherfuckers is with all the bullshit. You want to steal the money. You want to take all the money from the people and spend it on yourselves. Give tax cuts to billionaires, bitch. For what? What the fuck? That just sounds stupid. You know, and sometimes I think some of these fucking journalists or somebody needs to say this shit to them. That sounds fucking stupid. What's wrong with you? Are you fucking crazy? But everybody's so cautious about, I can't say nothing. Shit. I'm going to say what the fuck I want to say. I don't give a fuck what position I'm in. You're not going to silence me. How the fuck could I grow and learn from my bullshit if I do something wrong? If I don't hear about it. That's what the fuck is wrong with Donald Trump. Nobody ever tells him about his bullshit, you know, that's close to him, that should be saying, hey, man, you need to stop that. You know, Ivanka, old long neck ass, should have fucked a long time ago. She said, hey, Dad, that's not cool. You know, this is a no, Dad. This is an absolute no, the way you know. And that bitch, no, indeed. Shit, that bitch went and got her a Jewish man. She said, I'm going to fix him. Cause you know your motherfucking dad is a white supremacist, bitch. His fucking daddy was a white supremacist. KKK arrested at a KKK rally, 1927. So white supremacist, what do you mean? No way. No way, Jose. I'm hearing a little joke that Donald Trump not gonna let Hurricane Jose in, bitch. I promise you ain't got a choice. I promise you don't have a choice. Oh my good God. So Michael Flynn is in the news again, along with little Junior Flynn. You know, once again, with the passing things down to your kids, how do you actually show your child how to be a con person, how to be a thief, how to be a crook? That means you have not a conscience the first. You don't teach your fucking kids how to do that fucking shit. Never. That should never even cross your fucking mind. But this, again, lets us know what kind of people we're dealing with. Ooh, Lord have mercy. But, Mueller on his thing, baby. So I got all the faith in Mueller. In those, intel committees, I don't have no fucking faith in that bullshit, especially not with Burr at the head. No fucking way. And then Nunes always sticking his old blockhead ass into everything. Please get him a dictionary so he can look up your cues. It doesn't mean keep fucking with it. It means stop. Completely. You know, so it's one of those type of things. But it's just, how do you do that? Nunes just all over the fucking place. And nobody trying to stop him. You know, back again to the GOP. Now, I need to know, though, because, see, the FBI wants the transcripts from the Manafort and the Donald Trump Jr. Little sessions that the Congress had with him. Yeah, see, FBI want to take a look at that. And y'all are holding up the process, Congress. Why is that? I want to know why would you do that? Why would you possibly stall the FBI's efforts to, Mueller's efforts to, you know, conduct his investigation? Why are you trying to obstruct? But on the low, you know, So we can't really, you know. But we know, motherfuckers, we know. And to me, all that means is guilt. That means anyone that stalls this, is, you know, you have something to lose. You have something to be revealed about you. Whatever. You know, all the motherfuckers are guilty. And I'm pretty sure of taking that PAC money. You know, I think, you know, this is going to go really, really deep. This is probably going to be the biggest diaspora of fucking administration that's ever been in history. This is going to go down in history in so many fucking different ways. But it's all going to be bad, you know. There's nothing good going to happen but the resistance and taking America back. That's going to be awesome. But, you know, for them, nothing but bad things. And it couldn't happen to better people. I can't wait. Clam Simmel on top of his game. You know, that's why I say I have faith in him. And Congress, fuck no. You must be on dog food. Shit. No, indeed. And old Mitch McConnell got his chow chow. So they might be on dog food. Shit. What the fuck? I just can't. I can't with this damn Congress. They just all have to go. I love how Richard Painter says they all need to go. We're going to vote them all out. Okay. You got it, sir. Your wish is my command.
That is not the preferred position. You don't start with that. You make it clear that's where, if he does offensive measures against us, we would end up. But here's my big concern. Diplomacy with North Korea is complicated. It requires people who know the language, the customs, the history. We have decimated our State Department. Foreign service officers with decades of experience have either been ignored or in some cases pushed so hard that they have resigned. Right now, we need the best people we can possibly muster to have a full court press on diplomacy. And then we can see realistically where we are. But this missile test, and it's not clear yet from the early reports whether it's an intermediate range or an intercontinental ballistic missile, is sending a message from Kim Jong-un that he is not deterred. And that's what I mean about all the tough talk that we hear from our president really actually playing right into Kim Jong-un's hands. And that's what I mean when I say he's been played. And this is a clear and present danger. And if it's allowed to go forward, we will face even worse choices. That's why right now we need smart diplomatic intervention. If we don't have it in the government, then bring in some people from the outside with experience. We have experienced diplomats who have dealt with North Korea. But this needs to be happening right now. And get over the Twitter stuff and get on to the diplomatic negotiations.
You have described this week, you said that it seems to you that Defense Secretary Jim Mattis may be effectively operating as both Defense Secretary and Secretary of State. You, of course, are one of the highest profile Secretaries of State we've ever had. Rex Tillerson is among the lowest, certainly the lowest mm-hmm. in modern times. Mm-hmm. He has advocated a 30% cut to his own mm-hmm. agency. He's left dozens of senior jobs unfilled, as you said today. He told State Department staff that his biggest goal for the State Department is efficiency, and that's why he wants to shrink the State Department so much. They've even stopped doing daily press briefings. Given the risk of nuclear war with North Korea, given the sorts of diplomatic challenges that we've got around the country and around the world, why do you think they are hollowing up the State Department?
Well, I think they came in with pre-existing conceptions about the State Department and about diplomacy that were not particularly well-founded. It's not that you don't want to be more efficient. I actually had a process to try to make sure we became more efficient. But they came in with a bias against diplomats and diplomacy. Now, the good news, Rachel, is that the budget that Tillerson's been promoting has been rejected in the Senate Appropriations Committee on a bipartisan basis. The members of the Senate have said, look, you know, we've traveled the world. We know what our diplomats do on the front lines, and we are not going to give you a 30% cut. And they basically came up with about the same amount of money. So the Congress is even recognizing that there is no strategy. There's no real plan. What I hear from inside the department, because I still have a lot of communication coming to me,
is that there's a very small group of people around Tillerson, none of them experienced diplomats that he has brought in to be his palace guard, so to speak. They don't even reach out into the State Department to talk to the people who have studied North Korea for years. So they're not getting the expertise and experience that is still at the State Department.
Because and I think they're disdainful of that expertise.
I think they're disdainful. I think they don't know what they don't know, to be honest. I think that they had views that were superficial. And I think the perspective of Secretary Tillerson was as a chief executive officer, where you tell people what to do, you tell Kim Jong-un what to do, you tell people that, you know, you have a different plan. You know, that the world is a really complex place, and it's about a lot of things that people in the State Department have had experience with and at least should be brought to the table and listened to, which I don't think is happening.
Do you think that it was inherently a bad idea to take somebody who had been a lifer at Exxon, somebody who had only in his adult life ever worked at Exxon, the immediate past CEO of Exxon, to put him immediately in charge of diplomacy and the State Department? I mean, when you were Secretary of State in 2011, mm-hmm. Rex Tillerson went to Vladimir Putin's house
right
on the Black Sea to celebrate Exxon and Russia signing a $500 billion oil deal that's probably the biggest oil deal in the history of oil.
Right.
Putin later awarded him the Russian Order of Friendship when another part of that deal closed. I mean, was he a strange choice for the job? Is being the CEO of Exxon inappropriate experience to bring to the job that he's trying to do now?
I think it's very limited experience. You know, I think there have been in our past people with extensive business experience, CEO positions, other kinds of private sector work that I believe could have gotten into this position and had a better understanding of what's required in the 21st century. I don't know that he was a particularly bad choice from the very beginning. I mean, I didn't know anything about him other than what you just said, basically. But he's never reached out to anybody. He's never asked people. You know, there used to be a tradition. Republican, Democratic administrations, you would come in and the prior secretaries of state would all get together and have a dinner and talk. And oftentimes you would be on the other end of a phone call, say, you know, what did you deal with on this? Or can you tell me some more about that? I've talked to a few of the other secretaries of state that are still around, and nobody's heard anything, whether they were Republican or Democrat.
And you haven't had any communication?
No, none. I saw that I met him at the inauguration lunch, and that was it. And then you've got somebody like Steve Bannon, who clearly is wielding influence from the outside, who, you know, recently just spewed contempt about some excellent American public servants, including two prior Republican secretaries of state and one prior Republican national security advisor. So the attitude was so negative. And, you know, why take a job that you're not willing to really dive into and learn about? And you come in with preconceptions and you have a model that you're trying to put on top of an institution that has so much inherent strength, even though, yeah, does it have problems? Everything in government does. That's not a big surprise. But then not to want to learn. I kept waiting for the aha moment where you'd hear, you know, the secretary actually called in people and said, hey, tell me what I don't know. Tell me what I need to know. Let's listen. But from what I hear, that doesn't happen. And in fact, there's a concerted effort to prevent that from happening.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions, as you know, was less than forthcoming in his confirmation process with the Senate about his own contacts with Russian ambassador during the campaign. And when that came to light, he recused himself. He recused himself from any DOJ matters having to do with the campaign.
Right.
Tonight, the New York Times has reported that President Trump was so incensed about the Attorney General recusing himself from those matters and so angry about the appointment of Robert Mueller, the special counsel who's looking into Trump and Russia, that he berated the attorney general and called him an idiot in front of a room full of people. He told the attorney general that he should resign. Jeff Sessions, according to the New York Times, then submitted his resignation letter to the president, and the president would not accept it. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is said to have called this the most humiliating experience of his professional life. That's all been reported to me. Here's my question for you. Having been through your own particular version of the Trump ringer as his political opponent, do you have any advice for his staff?
Well, look, this is a man who engages in humiliation and domination as a tactic of control. And he acted out on the national stage, first in the Republican primary and then continuing into the general election. And I think for a lot of people watching, the public and the press, it was hard to turn away from. You haven't seen somebody at that high a level aiming for a job that's the most important in the world who behaves like that, who says what he says, who delights in mocking people, attacking people. So I think that's pretty deeply embedded in his character. And I think going forward, any effort to try to contain him, which I know some in the White House and in the broader administration have been trying to do, is especially important when it comes to consequential decisions. You know, as you just read this recent reporting, I think the goal might well have been psychologically to really make Jeff Sessions, who's a very proud man, I served with him in the Senate, didn't agree with him on anything, but I did serve with him, to make him just be more dependent on pleasing the president. Mm. Whatever he could do, delivering that speech about DACA, only to have Trump a few days later say, hey, just kidding, we're going to do something that'll keep these young strivers in our country. It's all part of his manipulation. That is who he is. That's how he behaves. So I'm hoping that the people who have a mature view of the exercise of power when it comes to something like North Korea, life or death, when it comes to something that would be incredibly stupid, given North Korea pulling out of the Iran deal so we have a second nuclear crisis to contend with, I'm hoping that on the really big issues, there's enough authority to be able to restrain and contain the president. That's what we all have to hope, because I think this president and some of the people around him pose a clear and present danger to our country. Domestically, to our institutions of democracy, our self-governance, our rule of law. Internationally, in so many ways, because of the unpredictability, then the fact that there is no strategic plan, there's just a reactive, emotional, visceral kind of behavior. So I can only hope, and I think every American who thinks about this can only hope, that, you know, people who know better, who have experience, and who realize that, you know, this country of ours is really worth defending and protecting, will be able to prevent anything really bad from happening. It's a horrible thing to have to say about anybody in that office.
On the question of the challenge that this presidency and this president proves for American norms, for the rule of law, I want to ask you about the lock her up thing.
Yeah.
Which started off as sort of astonishing and then became this regular daily feature of the campaign. The president and his supporters, you know, calling for your arrest, calling for you to be jailed. He has kept up his rallies as president, and that is still a regular thing that they chant when he mentions you derisively, as he always does. Do you take that literally? Do you worry that they might at some point try to gin up a prosecution against you?
Well, I know there's nothing there, so I don't take it substantively as much of a worry. But here's what I do believe. I believe that Trump admires authoritarians. He doesn't just like Putin. He wants to be like Putin. He wants to have that kind of power that is largely unaccountable, unchecked. And when I first heard that, especially at these rallies that, you know, were inciting violence and insulting people and all the rest of it, I thought it was bizarre, kind of, you know, really unbecoming somebody who's running for president. Then when they moved it into his convention and it was being done from the platform and people were chanting it and screaming it, I thought, wow, this is unlike anything I have ever read about or seen in presidential conventions. Every kind of political barrier that should have restrained this president and those urging him on was broken through. Mm-hmm. And so I don't personally worry. I have no doubt that if he got into serious political trouble, he'd try to gin something up, you know, about me or President Obama. We are his two favorite targets. But I worry that it is indicative of the kind of self-image that he has, not only of himself, but of what the president should be able to do. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's really imperative that the Republicans in Congress rein that in. That's part of the reason I mentioned on the State Department, you know, standing up to some of these very foolish plans that they have, why the press has to hold him more accountable than it did during the campaign, and why the people around him have to be our first line of defense against him doing something that could have serious repercussions.
Placing a lot of hope for the country in the wisdom of the people who surround him.
Well, it's not, we don't have much else to place it on right now. He is somebody who doesn't listen and pursues his own interests as he perceives them, and is very emotionally reactive. So on the small stuff, you know, they may not be able to stop him. They may need to, you know, hold their fire till something is serious enough to intervene.
We'll be back in just one moment with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Don't go anywhere. Seriously.
I think the lady said it all. This has been Unrestricted Resistance. I'm Spirit. Next week sometime, another podcast. It will probably be late night still, but I'm out of here. Hillary said it all on Rachel. That's it for me. I'm out. Peace and blessings, y'all. The Trump Free Zone is gonna take me out. Hope you guys have enjoyed the show. Join me next time. Bye.